It's time now for the Sports Objective Podcast. No talking heads, just guys who love sports. Here's Dave Richmond.
Welcome into the Sports Objective Podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, another great episode. I cannot believe it, but we've got another one. We have with us today from the NASCAR Hall of Fame, we'll have Tom Jensen. We'll be talking to him about the latest class getting ready to be inducted in late May. We'll talk about that. Plus, we have from the David Glenn Show, we have DG, and he'll be with us. We'll be talking a lot of cool sports with him. And finally, last but certainly not least, we get a chance to talk to the play-by-play voice of the East Carolina baseball team, Corey Glore, and we'll do that and much more. In fact, let's go ahead and get started with our very first interview. I enjoyed talking to him very much, and that's Tom Jensen of the NASCAR Hall of Fame in downtown Charlotte, and let's go to him right now. You're listening to the Sports Objective Podcast, and ladies and gentlemen, with us right now for the NASCAR Hall of Fame, Tom Jensen, the Curatorial Affairs Manager. Tom, thank you so much for coming on the Sports Objective Podcast.
Oh, my pleasure. Glad to be here, Dave.
Tell folks a little bit about yourself. We're excited to have you on. Love the NASCAR Hall of Fame. And what do you do there at the Hall?
Well, I've been in NASCAR for 22 years. I started at Winston Cup Scene, where I was executive editor, and then I was managing editor at National Speed Sport News. And for 13 years, I was at FoxSports.com as their lead NASCAR writer and one of their content editors covering motorsports and cars. And I've been at the NASCAR Hall of Fame since last November, and I'm curatorial affairs manager. And in that position, I do a little bit of everything. I help plan and implement exhibits. I write a lot of the graphics that go towards explaining individual artifacts. I give tours to guests that come in, speak to groups that come in. A little bit of everything. It's kind of fun because no 2 days are exactly alike.
That's definitely a great. In fact, I know people can go, you guys, I want to brag about your website. You guys have a tremendous website. If you're a NASCAR fan listening right now, NASCARHall.com, I really love it. It's one of my favorite ones. Not only is it, a lot of times you see, Tom, when they have a really nice, people have nice websites. They're not easy to navigate through, but I was really impressed. I've looked at it many times, but even recently, getting ready for the interview with you, I really love the website.
Well, thank you, Dave. We enjoy it, and we try to provide fans with useful information about the Hall and about the inductees here. So it's constantly a work in progress, as every website is, but we're doing our best to keep people informed and educated.
I know there are a lot of folks that, being that the Hall is downtown Charlotte, a lot of people want, especially if you're from, I guess, upstate South Carolina, wherever you're from, if you're a big NASCAR fan, to come. But it's a great, I'm really impressed with seeing, I've never been there, but definitely have to make a point to take my family there. I know it's very family friendly, and there's a lot of stuff to do right there.
Oh, there are a lot of things to do. And we get a lot of young people in here. We do STEM education with students. We're very involved with some of the local school boards, helping kids learn about racing. And if you want people to become fans, you got to get them early. And that's one of the things we try to do here. And obviously, it's a very family-friendly environment as well. So when you're ready to bring your family, you let me know. I'll show you around personally.
Well, thank you. We definitely will. Sometime very soon with our schedule, for sure. It's been hectic with the kids are in T-ball and different things right now, so when we get maybe in the latter part of the summer, we will have more time. I wanted to ask you, it was funny when the first class in 2010, I'll never forget, people, I guess, didn't know very much about NASCAR, but it was really funny because they said, all right, you know, with Dale Earnhardt in there and Richard Petty and the France family in there, I think Junior Johnson, they were like, okay, who else is going to go in? Isn't that everybody? And I started laughing because I was like, there's many people that I know that are not in there as a race fan. And there's, I started as a kid in the late 70s becoming a fan as a little boy, probably 4 or 5 years old. And that's probably my era, the last, I would say, 40 years. And there were people, many, many great people involved in racing even before me that I don't know, I don't even know. And that's one of the great things I wanted to mention about the Hall of Fame as someone who loves history, is there's a lot of people I'm learning about that I didn't know that were came even before me.
Yeah, I mean, this is an experience, and we all learn things here at the Hall of Fame, including me. There are some things, and I've been involved in the sport in a long time, but there are a lot of things, especially about the early history of the sport, that I didn't even know. And it's fun going through and looking at some of the old publications we have and listening to the stories from some of the Hall of Famers. It's a great resource. And the more you know, I think the more you appreciate the sport and how far it's come. And this is a fun place, and it's a place where you can be entertained and you can have a good time, but it's also a place when you walk out, you'll be smarter than when you walked in.
Well, I know you had the class of 18. What a tremendous class with Red Byron. I'm seeing Ray Everham, Ron Hornaday Jr., Ken Squire, and Robert Yates. But I wanted to mention to fans listening right now, you also have up, which I didn't know until a few days ago, you already have the class of 2019 nominees, right?
Yes, we have 20 nominees for the class of 2019. And what's going to happen is on May 23rd, here at the Hall of Fame, we have what's called Voting Day. And let me backtrack a bit. There are the way the process works on getting in the Hall of Fame, there is a nominating committee. And that committee currently consists of 24 individuals. And I'm fortunate enough, this is my first year on the nominating committee. And we meet in Daytona Beach the Friday before the Daytona 500. And the 24 of us get in a room, lock ourselves in a room for 3 hours, and we have a blank piece of paper with 1 to 20, 20 blank lines on it. And we talk for about 3 hours on what 20 people we think should be the nominees to go into the next class. And the people, there's officials from NASCAR, there's track promoters, there's myself and Winston Kelly, who's our executive director at the Hall, and some of the veterans of the sport. And at the end of the 3 hours, we take and fill out, write in 20 names. They're each put in a sealed envelope for each of the 24 of us, and we have an accounting firm tabulate them. Then in early March, they're announced on NASCAR America on NBC. Who the 20 nominees will be. On May 23rd, which is coming up, you know, 4 weeks from now, 4 weeks from tomorrow, we will meet what's called the voting panel. And that's between, and the number fluctuates a little bit every year because people fall off and get added, but it's between 55 and 60 people. And we will meet, and it will be basically the same process. We'll lock ourselves in a room. We'll talk for 3 hours. We'll argue. We'll lobby, we'll campaign for people we think should be in, and at the end of it, we'll vote, and the votes will go into sealed envelopes, and they will be announced here at the Hall, live, and NASCAR America on NBC will be here, and they'll do a live broadcast of the names being announced, and fans can come in for the announcement. They can't sit in the room when we discuss who the five are going to be. But they can come sit in the audience when the five are announced. And it's one of the most fun days of the year. It's very exciting. I'm sorry, that was kind of a long-winded answer, but that's how it works.
No, that's a very great inside scoop on what's going on with the Hall. And I know that at one time when my schedule had a different schedule than I have now, I know Dave Moody from SiriusXM Speedway, I know he was one of the voting members. I don't know if he still is, but that was a few years ago. When I had a different schedule, is he still on the voting committee?
I believe he is. I'm going to look that up while we talk.
Sorry,
but no. Dave's a good friend of mine and a really a good guy and quite knowledgeable. But I believe he is one of the members. Let's see here.
I was going to say the reason I like him is I am a PA announcer for a local track in Kenley Southern National Speedway, and he always has been pro local track, and I appreciate his support of local tracks around the nation. That really helps us out a lot.
Yes, and to answer your question, yes, Dave is still on the voting panel.
Very cool, because he's somebody that definitely, when you think as a NASCAR fan, and somebody that has been around the sport, he's a great announcer. Love his show weekdays on SiriusXM as well. He's a guy that you definitely want on that committee. And I know you have various people on, like you said, on the committee, right, that represent different parts of the sport.
Sure. We have on the voting panel, we have media members. We have retired drivers and crew chiefs. We have track owners and operators. We have NASCAR officials. It's a pretty good size group.
Wanted to ask you as well about the Hall. What kind of exhibits do you have? I know usually with Hall of Fames, and unfortunately I haven't been there, I'm having to go by your lead. Obviously you're the expert and not me. What kind of exhibits do you have currently at the Hall that people would be interested in?
Well, right now the main exhibit we have is a Cars 3 exhibit, which is really cool because we are one of only two locations in the world that have a life-size Lightning McQueen. One of only two non-Walt Disney properties that have a Lightning McQueen. The other one is the Peterson Museum in Los Angeles. And so we have an exhibit and a film that talks about Cars 3 and the links to NASCAR's history. And I don't know if you've seen the film or not, but it's obvious that the filmmakers have a great deal of love and respect for the history and traditions of NASCAR. And I think they did a wonderful job with the original Cars and now Cars 3, which is sort of back to the NASCAR roots. So we have a comprehensive exhibit dealing with that. Upstairs on the second floor, we have what's called the Hall of Honor, and that's sort of the heart and soul of the Hall of Fame. And that's a room where each of the five current nominees has a display case, and four of the five have a car in there, have a race car that was significant in their careers. And then they have trophies and uniforms and checkered flags and things that they have picked out that are important in their career. My personal favorite, the late Robert Yates, who was one of the all-time great guys in NASCAR. And I don't know anybody who didn't like him, except the guys who had to race against him, because he
was going to say that
he was so good. But we have his original toolbox from Holman Moody, like 1967 or 68.
Oh, wow.
And it's got all these stickers on it: Boss 429 Ford, and Racing at Darlington is Fun, it's like a history book, and it's the real deal. It was his toolbox that he first got when he went to work for Holman and Moody. So we have lots of things for people to see. We have simulators that are connected to iRacing, so you can come in and race your buddies on iRacing. And we have the tracks that are set up, our stuff, so wherever they're racing that week, that's what's in the simulator, which means this week is Talladega. So if you want to get in the simulator and white knuckle it around Talladega, bumper to bumper, you can do that. So we have plenty of things to do here.
I went, as a matter of fact, I haven't been to a race, but I went to visit the racetrack. I was in Talladega on business at a basketball camp. I was teaching at the Eastern North Carolina School for the Deaf and coaching there, and we had a basketball tournament there. It's probably been about 10 or 11 years ago. Went to the track, and the one thing I will say is television never does NASCAR justice. And what I mean by that is when it comes to the feel of the sport, it does to a certain extent. But what I mean by that is, when I saw Talladega, I always knew it was big, but I didn't know how big Talladega was until I visited there, and the banking and everything was incredible.
Oh, it's huge. Yeah, it's the largest track in NASCAR, the largest oval, and it is amazing. I was there when the late Dale Earnhardt won his last race October 15th, 2000, and I want to tell you, Dave, he came from 17th or 18th to win in the last four laps, and I literally thought one or more of the grandstands was going to fall down because people were stomping their feet, and I mean the whole crowd was thundering. It was as loud as can be, and it was a surreal experience.
He's been certainly missed over the last, it's hard to believe, 17 years now, something like that, since we lost him. But the great thing about the Hall I was going to mention is, though, unfortunately, the people that we have lost, that we can, their legacy lives on. And I've just been fascinated. I've learned a lot by checking out the website from time to time and learning about drivers I've never heard of. And there's people, obviously, like I said, in the last four decades that I know about, but even with the people you know about, there's stuff that you don't even know about them. So there's always something you can learn at the NASCAR Hall of Fame. I know, can you give folks your hours? And certainly, I want to, if there are people listening right now, I know that you guys have like a group tour. You said tours, but if it's like any kind of groups, I know you said as well that maybe there's some people listening that want to get a group of, I don't know, 10 or 20. Can you accommodate that, or how does it work?
Oh, sure. We have group sales packages. We also work with a group called Racing Insiders, and you can go to racinginsiders.com, all one word, for more information about them. But they do private tours with people, and we have the way the Racing Insiders tours work is you come here, you start here, and either myself or our curator, Dan Simone, gives you a private tour of our vault where you get to see things that aren't on the floor, and we bring out some pretty special items, and then you get a tour of the hall, and then you go to visit race shops in the area. And sometimes it's Hendrick Motorsports, and sometimes it's Roush Fenway Racing, and it's all different locations. So we do that. We do groups just for here. You can come individually. We're open Monday, we're open 7 days a week, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. You can buy your tickets online at NASCARHall.com, and you can get information about things like scheduling a team building trip or an educational field trip or corporate tickets. So there's all the information you need is at NASCARHall.com.
Well, you were talking earlier in the interview about the kids. It's really important. We try really hard to get as many kids at our local track. And certainly when you were talking earlier about the earlier you get them, the best, the more of a chance you have them as a fan. I'm trying to do that with my son and daughter now. It's great for all ages is what I'm trying to point out for the NAS. A lot of times kids it may not be kid friendly, but we were talking earlier about family friendly. And this is a case where you can bring your kids or your grandkids and get them involved in the sport early on.
Yep, absolutely.
Well, I'd love to have you on from time to time, especially if you have exhibits and new things. And certainly we'd love to have you back on maybe in the summertime to talk about the new class. And give that date again. When is the date we can find out about the new class coming out for 2019?
It'll be May 23rd, 4 weeks from tomorrow, and it's going to be very exciting. We've got a great class. There's a good likelihood, among the new nominees this year, we've got Jeff Gordon is on the ballot for the first time, and I'd say there's a pretty strong chance he's going to get in on the first ballot. We've got John Holman and Ralph Moody, who formed the Holman Moody race team that began in the late 50s and was Ford's factory team for many years. There's guys who've been on the ballot before, 15 returning people. Another new guy we've got this year is Kirk Schoemerdine, who was crew chief for four of Dale Earnhardt's seven championships. So we've gotten a robust group of people this year.
It is exciting. I cannot wait. So May 23rd, we can mark that on our calendars to definitely check out the new class. In fact, I want to finally say, too, that I think you guys do it right. You guys put five in every year, correct?
Yes, sir.
And I think that's great because I love baseball and I love Hall of Fames, but some of the Hall of Fames don't do it like you guys do it with. I think five is a very good number. It's not too little and it's not too many. I think it's just right. So I appreciate what y'all are doing. I can't wait to come myself personally, and I want to invite everybody to Definitely go to the NASCAR Hall of Fame in downtown Charlotte. Again, go to NASCARHall.com. And Tom, I appreciate your time. I know that you're very busy. You've given us a lot, and I look forward to having you on many times here on the Sports Objective Podcast.
My pleasure, Dave. Feel free to reach out anytime. I would be happy to come back.
Our next guest is actually someone I've known down for about 6 years and had a chance to work with him while I was working in radio in Raleigh at WPTF. And he was actually, we shared the same studios. Now let's go to David Glenn of The David Glenn Show.
You're listening to the Sports Objective Podcast. And ladies and gentlemen, one of my good friends, appreciate him coming on. From the streets of Philadelphia, he makes his home in the Triangle area and the 2014 North Carolina Sportscaster of the Year, and he hosts the David Glenn Show. He is David Glenn. DG, thank you so much for coming on the Sports Objective Podcast.
Hey, Dave, it's great to be with you again.
Absolutely. We worked together at Curtis Media for, I guess it was a few years, and got to know you really well. Enjoyed the show as a fan before that, and wanted to bring you on to talk, obviously, sports, and there's lots of things I'm sure you could talk about. You're a very, very smart guy. Wanted to have you on. Certainly, I think one of the things that's on the top of my mind is about the Carolina Hurricanes. There's a, we knew a GM search, now there's a coaching search, and then Bill Peters a couple of days ago, or yesterday, maybe gets a job with the Calgary Flames. I just want to get your take because I know the reason I reached out to you and on this subject is I know you're very close to the organization, even though you don't work with them. And, of course, you know a lot of great people with the organization. And I just want to get your take from someone that you actually have followed hockey for a number of years, your whole life, and I'm in since 1997 when the Canes came to North Carolina.
Yeah, Dave, I would say that it is both one of the most exciting times in the history of the Carolina Hurricanes and one of the scariest times in the history of the Carolina Hurricanes. And I say both of those things because, as you referenced, I am both a media member who covers the team and the league and talks about them on the air from time to time, but I am also a season ticket holder. So I have a direct relationship as somebody who spends money out of my own pocket to get good seats and take my friends and colleagues and family at times. And I do know a lot of people in the organization, virtually everybody. And it's sad for us to say or hear that this team has missed the playoffs for 9 straight years. That is the longest active drought in the entire sport. And that this team has missed the playoffs all but 1 year since they won the Stanley Cup. And many of us were there in person back in 2006 when it happened. In a sport where more than half the teams make the postseason, you can't have this kind of a drought. Now, the exciting and scary part also applies to the new owner. We don't know enough about Tom Dundon to know if he's going to be a solution to the problem. We don't know what to make of some early headlines about him not offering enough money for a good general manager, or what he has in mind for the next head coach of the Hurricanes, or is he willing to spend closer to the salary cap, or is he going to be more Peter Karmanos-like, who was usually unwilling to spend that extra cash because he knows he's in a smaller market, he knows his economics are different. You know me, I'm in favor of the crazy rich guy. I want to see somebody come into the Carolina Hurricanes organization, and maybe Tom Dundon will be this guy. I want to see him overspend. I want to see him spend to close to the salary cap, even though he's a small market. I want him to send the message to free agent players, to people wondering whether they should renew their season tickets, or even to media members who might be wondering whether the Hurricanes or the NHL are worth dedicating a lot of resources to. I hope that Tom Dundon can be, and you know, the crazy rich guy, in air quotes, who makes this a place that more free agents want to come to, more of the top players want to stay here, and more fans, you know, believe that it's worth their investment to cash to put down that cash or and renew those season tickets or show up on game day. It's too early for us to know the results of that, but it is a scary time. Ron Francis has been reassigned. Bill Peters, as you said, has taken the Calgary Flames job. Rod Brind'Amour is a candidate for the head coaching position, but there are others. And you usually don't hire a head coach until you hire a general manager. So there are more variables that have not fallen into place yet than there are, even though we're getting to know Tom Dundon as the new owner. And I think it's still a guessing game as to how he's going to proceed with his payroll, how he's going to proceed in other ways. And that makes it a scary time for Canes fans, even if the optimists are hoping that Tom Dundon can be the answer to all their dreams.
Exactly. David, I tell you, the that end of the year press conference made me extremely nervous, and I'm a guy that I like his enthusiasm, but at the same time, it made me worried. And then we're hearing about the public GM search thing. It started out, it was very weird or odd, and then I thought that Bill Peters would honestly be back. I understand there's 4 years that he's been coach, I believe, but without any playoff appearances, but I didn't think Bill Peters was the problem. And my concern is, are we hitting like the panic button, panic mode, and then we can get rid of a whole bunch of great talent, get rid of a great coach, GM, the whole nine yards, and then we could be even worse than we are now?
Well, I agree with a lot of what you said about Bill Peters. I don't think he was the number one issue. It's a talent first issue. And I've thought that for almost the entirety of this drought. Other teams simply have more talented players in a larger volume than the Canes do. And I mean at least half the league, maybe more, fits that description. So it's an uphill battle from the beginning, even if you have a healthy season, even if you have some overachievers, even if you have a young talent like Sebastian Aho. Tom Dundon, at times, sounds like the guy who became a self-made multi-billionaire because he was smarter than a lot of other people in the car loan industry, for example. He was smarter than a lot of other people in investing in the golf industry on top of that. So he's a true self-made billionaire. He was not born with a silver spoon in his mouth, and he's trying to apply some of his successful themes and philosophies to hockey that he applied in the business world. We'll see to what degree that works. But I'm not sure he's wrapped his brain around yet the fact that you have to be different to attract players to the Carolina Hurricanes. You can't just say Raleigh's a great place to live, or the South is a wonderful part of the country, or you can help us get back to where we were 12 years ago. You have to show these guys the money. And I do think that spending more as an investment has a great chance of bringing the caliber of hockey to a point where more people want to show up in the building. Tom Dundon has even said that himself. We've got to give people more reason to want to come and want to renew those season tickets and want to show up on game day. And winning is a big part of that, but I would argue that so is investing. And if you're – one quick number for you, Dave. The seven teams that spent the most money – in the National Hockey League this year, all made the playoffs. The seven teams that spent the least amount of money all missed the playoffs. Wow. Now, I am not going to argue that it is all about more money means playoffs. It's not that simple. But when I gave you those two numbers, and they are accurate, seven biggest spenders all made it, seven smallest spenders all missed it. Of course there is a correlation there. And you can't leave $20 million between what you're paying to fill the roster of the Carolina Hurricanes and what some others are paying elsewhere in the NHL, $20 million, Dave, that's three or four different high-end players, right, if you're willing to spend that extra $20 million. I know it's not easy in a small market, but I think that's something that Tom Dundon has to consider if he wants to rally the hockey world from free agents to his own fans around the idea that this ownership change is just from Peter Karmanos and his set of warts and pluses and negatives, and Tom Dundon with a completely different set of those same things.
You being close, there's two questions I had with you as far as the Hurricanes. One, that I have friends that know hockey extremely well, that are transplants, if you will, from the Chicago area, one particular example, who they're very afraid that they have, of course, they're Blackhawks fans. They're kind of like you. I know you're a Flyers fan, but you're a season ticket holder for the Canes. This particular friend of mine is a Blackhawks fan, but yet he's a huge fan now of the Hurricanes, and he's really worried that Dundon will move the team in a couple years. Do you think that's going to happen?
I think that's unlikely. You never say never because he is from Dallas. Houston is a huge American city that doesn't have its own NHL team. There are others that would love an NHL team and don't have one right now. But the number one reason, I don't think it's in Tom Dundon's heart right now, but the number one reason, even bigger than that, is that it does require the approval of the other NHL owners to make that happen. And they do not want to call the Mid-Atlantic region of the United States of America, which has a huge population center in the state of North Carolina, a couple million plus in Charlotte, a million plus in Raleigh and the surrounding areas, they don't want to say that they failed in the Mid-Atlantic the way they've already failed in, say, Atlanta, a little bit to our south. So it is a world in which there can be a logical fear that Tom Dundon may have a secret backup plan that, of course, he would be crazy to say out loud. I mean, he knows not enough to not sabotage his chances in North Carolina by saying that's his plan B, and I have no idea if it is or not. But never forget the ownership aspect of that equation, whether it's Panthers fans worrying about Jerry Richardson selling his NFL team and will the next owner automatically keep the Panthers as the team of the Carolinas, or whether it's Tom Dundon and these Hurricanes. These leagues do not like pulling up stakes and giving up on major markets at all. And you need, in the NFL, for example, a vote of 3/4 of your fellow owners to get the approval to move your franchise. A lot of those owners don't want to see that happen for a lot of different reasons. I think that applies in the NHL as well. Remember, owners get rich when there are expansion franchises that go to new cities. Owners do not get rich when there are franchises that move from one city to another. So those are two different dynamics that make it really hard for the Canes to move. But I don't blame people for asking the question, because this is a ridiculously long drought. This is a new owner who's not from here. And the economics of the Carolina Hurricanes organization do make it an uphill battle at times, unless you find an owner who just wants to spend that huge money, and we're not sure Tom Dundon is that guy just yet.
I wanted to ask you about a guy that's in your Hall of Fame, the David Glenshow Hall of Fame, and your friend Rod Brendamore, of course, a big part of that 2006 Stanley Cup run, the captain raising that. I know you were there at Game 7. I was out of town. I went to a lot of the games in that run. I tell you what, man, I don't want to meet that guy in a street fight.
He's
in amazing shape. And I'll be honest, as a huge fan, I think that a player like Brendan Moore, or players like Brendan Moore, having that grit, it's just certain intangibles that you can't figure out why it's happening. But it certainly seems like a guy like Brendan Moore would be the perfect answer, since he's already been here. He knows the culture of North Carolina, the Raleigh area, the Triangle, and it seems like he'd be the perfect guy to put in there as the coach.
Well, I agree with you. We'll see if Tom Dundon holds it against Rod Brindamore that either A, he's never been a head coach before, and that's a fair question, but also B, you know, he has been associated as an assistant coach with a lot of these teams that have fallen short. And as you said, Rod Brindamore is a member of the David Glenshow Hall of Fame. I can honestly say that in 31 years being paid to cover sports, I have not met anybody that I like and respect more than I like and respect Rod Brindamore. And that's as a person and as a retired hockey player and for his more general knowledge of the game. He has an unbelievable work ethic. He has an unbelievable combination of humility, and it is true, sincere humility, despite his amazing resume. That Stanley Cup, he was the captain of that team. He has the universal respect of every player he's ever coached and every player he's ever played with or against, and that's not easy to say. So those are starting points for an elite leader, and that's why I hope Rod Brindamore gets a chance even beyond my personal friendship with him. We just don't know. Will Tom Dundon, the new owner, say, hey, Ron Francis had his name attached to too much of that long stretch of not enough winning, so I have to reassign him away from GM. Does he hold Rod Brindamore in that same light and say, I really need a fresh start if I'm going to get the fans to rally around the idea that I'm trying to start a new era of Carolina Hurricanes hockey? I hope that Rod Brindamore's time, you know, as an assistant coach, to be honest, helping to lead teams that didn't have enough talent to make the playoffs in most cases, I would hope that's not held against Rod. He does want this job. He is going to be a candidate for this job. Tom Dundon has said that. But whether he gets it or not remains to be seen. I'm rooting for him, and there is no better leader in hockey. And I think that's something that the Hurricanes have lacked at times in their organization and at times certainly on the ice, where even the guys wearing the C's letter this year, Jordan Stahl and Justin Falk are examples of guys who I don't believe are great leaders. I like them as hockey players. Right. But that's just one more thing that the Hurricanes did wrong. That Justin Williams guy should have been wearing the C all along.
Absolutely. I agree with you 100% there. Want to shift gears a little bit to football and baseball if we can. I know you talked this week about, in fact, today we're recording, being Tuesday, about the hottest teams in as far as college baseball. And you've got them a lot in North Carolina, including the Triangle Schools and East Carolina. I can't remember a time, and maybe you can because you've been covering ACC sports for over 30 years. Has there ever been a time where you have the Triangle Schools plus you have East Carolina that is really good and top 25 in the nation? It boggles my mind.
I would have to double check to be sure, but I will say this. I don't remember a time better in 30 plus years of covering college baseball here for either A, the state of North Carolina, which has four of the top 20 by itself. And that is in the rankings, state number two, you know, ECU number seven, Carolina number 10, and Duke is in the top 20 as well. Beyond them, UNC Wilmington has a great program. Wake Forest has a really good program, and they're both pretty good this year as well. And if you want to stretch it a little further, Dave, you know, Coastal Carolina and Clemson, located just to our south in the Palmetto State, they're also in the top 20 nationally. So that's six of the top 20. In college baseball, as we speak from the Carolinas, I would be shocked if there was a time in the last 30-plus years where the Carolinas, plural, had six of the top 20 all by themselves. And if that did happen, you know, it might have only tied what we have going on right now. Elliott Avent is the winningest coach in the history of NC State baseball. You know really well what Cliff Godwin has done with the ECU Pirates over these last four seasons. Coach Fox has it going with the Tar Heels. Duke has been a massive upgrade lately. And again, I don't count out UNC Wilmington, Wake Forest, and some of the others. It is as good a time for college baseball in North Carolina as we have ever had. And a lot of people think the Pirates, the Wolfpack, the Devils, and the Heels will all host NCAA regionals. If you win there, you have a shot at hosting super regionals. And, of course, we never get enough participants in the College World Series. Given how many candidates we have, I don't think it's an unreasonable bet to say at least one of those teams is going to end up representing our great state in Omaha.
It's going to be an interesting time, and we certainly will have you back on in a couple months to talk about that stretch. Hopefully we can talk about multiple teams in North Carolina and hopefully my alma mater. I don't want to jinx it, but also want to talk to you about football. By the way, I have a huge prediction to make, and I'm just going to go on the limb right here.
Yeah.
Looking at my crystal ball, I think the DG, David Glenn, is going to be September 8th in Greenville for the Continental Tire tailgate show. What do you think?
Let's break news on your podcast and say yes, that is going to happen. I'm not supposed to release such things publicly here in the month of April, but for you, Dave, I will. And I will guarantee that that game and that weekend in Greenville are part of the 2018 Big Tailgate Tour. And I'm looking forward to it. I demand with the powers that be that we take at least one Greenville trip, usually two, but at least one every year. I have a blast every time I come down there for a football game or any other reason. So absolutely, positively, yes, we'll be back in Greenville this year, and yes, we will be back for that particular game.
And it's going to be huge, DG, because I would say this real quick. I've mentioned a few times already on the podcast, that North Carolina game normally is huge because of pride. It may be the difference whether Coach Montgomery saves his job or not, because if you look at the schedule, as I have about every day now when I'm covering the Pirates and different teams, it's a really rough conference schedule. The winnable games come in November as far as conference. And when you look at September, you have A&T, North Carolina at home, at Virginia Tech, at South Florida, and you have an Old Dominion team at home, but don't think that they're going to be an easy win. So the month of September, if you don't win the North Carolina game, that's going to make you possibly two and three, and you're going to need four games between October and November, which November you may need three out of four. So it's going to be a really difficult thing. September is going to be huge, and that's why people need to be with you September 8th, because that game may, if they win that game, they'd be 2-0, and then they'd have a chance to win three games. But anyway, I wanted to get your final thoughts, too, on the spring games? I know there are a lot of people think they're boring and you really can't tell anything. Did you see anything as far as the ACC schools in East Carolina that stood out?
Well, I think it's going to be exciting to watch the quarterbacks. You know, we feel like we say that many years, but just think of the schools that we follow. Ryan Finley decided to stay at NC State rather than jumping early to the NFL, and he is a pro prospect. So we have a chance to see him in his senior year, coming off a season where Dave Doran had his best record with 9 wins last year. Daniel Jones at Duke is a proven commodity who wasn't as good as he wanted to be last year, but is playing under the same guy who mentored Peyton Manning and Eli Manning, so is expected to have a much better season as a returning starter for the Blue Devils. You had a couple of interesting guys in Chaz Surratt and Nathan Elliott at Carolina. I don't know if the Tar Heels will find a star from that group, but at least you have two guys who started games for you a year ago, and then you would know the story even better than I, Holton Ahlers, from right there in Greenville. That is not an easy guy to get out of D.H. Conley High School. The Pirates were able to pull that off. He arrived early. He is much different than your typical true freshman. So whether it's more than one guy we enjoy watching or whether it's this coronation of the star freshman, you know, that's one more reason to watch Pirate football in 2018, along with the reasons you mentioned earlier. You know, Scotty Montgomery is in a trickier position right now than Dave Doran at NC State or David Cutcliffe of Duke or Dave Clawson at Wake Forest or Scott Satterfield at Appalachian State. I mean, Larry Fedora had a bad year last year, so there might be some big, heavy, hot eyeballs on him.
Right.
But Scotty Montgomery has both the excitement of what this new player and new offense is going to look like, but also sort of the burden and the weight of can the Pirates break through on his watch, because especially with an AD dismissal with Jeff Confer, no coach can feel too safe, and Scotty Montgomery needs to win sooner than later for sure.
With a third season, hopefully we'll see go bowling in December. Well, I'll tell you what, DG, I know you're very busy, but I want to thank you so much for coming on. In fact, I want to remind folks they can listen to the David Glenn Show noon to 3 Eastern. You can find your local affiliate anywhere in the state of North Carolina. Plus, there's lots of great apps you can find at DG Show. Plus, if you love podcasts and you listen to this one, you have the David Glenn Show that you can actually get all 3 hours, right, Dave?
That is right. Go follow us on Twitter, at David Glenn Show. My interns and my producer, Darren Vaught, have done a great job in the last couple of years, especially, of making sure that every single hour of every single show does end up in a podcast form. You can find us at davidglenshow.com, and you can find us on Twitter at David Glenn Show.
And also, I want to remind folks about accsports.com. They can subscribe there if they're fans of the ACC. They have maybe recruiting. You guys do an excellent job on recruiting. Who's staying, who's going with all the ones and dones with basketball. And I know with football and all the sports, you do an excellent job.
Thanks, man. Dave, always great to be with you, man. Appreciate the invitation. Good luck with your podcast.
Our third and final guest is actually a tremendous broadcaster who is his third season now with the East Carolina Baseball Pirates. And what a run they have right now going on. And good luck to them to the rest of the season. Ladies and gentlemen, the voice of the ECU Pirates. Let's go down to that interview with Corey Glory.
You're listening to the Sports Objective Podcast, and ladies and gentlemen, from the Pirate Sports IMG Network, the voice of the ECU Pirates baseball team, and that would be Corey Glory. Thank you so much for coming on, man.
Hey, thanks for having me, Dave. It's a pleasure.
Absolutely. I wanted to have you on because the Pirate baseball team looking really good, and I know we have a little time here. I know the Pirates have all gotten off to a good start, but right out of the gate, I know that before we get too ahead of everything, you know there's a long season still ahead, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny that now this is the time of the year when projections are all coming out from various media outlets, and I keep looking at them, and I keep thinking, why are we doing this right now? There's really no point, because it's amazing how in this sport there's just such an element of randomness, and so I feel over the next couple of weeks, everything that we're seeing in the league, everything that we're seeing in these tournament projections, they're all going to be thrown into a blender come end of May. So it's fun fodder to see all of this, and it's great to see where the Pirates sit in all of these, but there is still so much left to be determined here that even sitting here firmly and saying, yeah, get your regional tickets now for Greenville seem way out of place because there's just so much that can fall in line and out of line over the next couple of weeks.
Well, that's what I wanted to talk about was the very fact this team is looking really good, but you never know. There was so much as far as high expectations coming out of the Lubbock Regional. I enjoyed listening to you, and I'm thinking, man, I really thought this is the story. Just imagine this. It's probably the worst thing to do, but I'm DJing a wedding. It's like 100 degrees outside, literally. I'm not kidding, like 98 degrees. And I'm DJing a wedding. I can't even see the CD players or the MP3 stuff because the glare on the things. I'm trying really hard to play songs. It's an outdoor wedding. I'm listening to you. There was a lot to be distracted, and we're so close. And I'm thinking, man, this guy's a good luck charm. We're going to definitely – Corey's going to take us to Omaha, and next thing I know, we're not. And so then the expect roll to last year, I'm thinking, man, we're the preseason top 10. We're going to be right back, and you just never know. Season to season is different, right?
Yeah, it just shows you a little bit about superstition, right, Dave? There's really no spot for it in baseball. If you thought, hey, I was the guy that was going to lead this team there, I can only do so much. I apologize. I'm sure your wedding guests enjoyed listening to music as well as me at the same time, by the way.
No, they didn't. That's the thing. They didn't. I had buddies texting me, and then I was trying to hear as much as I could, and that's terrible. But
they don't need to know. They're not. They don't know.
Hopefully, they don't listen to the podcast.
Exactly. I mean, it's from the 2016 season to last year. You're right. There was so much riding on heading into 2017 after how 2016 finished, and you always kind of approach baseball preseason stuff with trepidation because, again, there's just so much that can happen right out of the gate that you just don't anticipate with this sport. And you can lose games that you think you should win, and you can win games you think you should lose. There was reason to be that high on that 2017 team because everybody was back from the super regional team that came so close to Omaha. And then it's just one guy after another fell out of the rotation, fell out of the lineup due to a myriad of circumstances, and this team didn't quite know how to handle that and how to handle plugging in a new guy and having them do their job and not try and make up for someone else's absence. So that the 2016 team, I think that got lost a little bit, is that they stayed incredibly healthy during the course of the year, and they were also a pretty up and down team. It wasn't until the postseason when they really kicked it into gear and they came that close. So it was amazing how a team that was relatively inconsistent that got to the super regionals had that high of a level of anticipation heading into the following year. And once one guy went down, like Evan Krasinski on the mound, once he went down, and then Chris Hoba following him, Bryce Harmon was out for a while, DeJuan Ewing Sutton was out for a while. It was just a whole bunch of dominoes that fell, and this team didn't know how to handle dealing with absences. And it showed through in 2017 for a year that was ultimately disappointing. One year in baseball does not translate to the next, and I think 2016 to 2017 and then into this year certainly shows that for this program.
It's great to see you bouncing back, and I've heard Coach Godwin talk on various media outlets about he was kind of glad that it happened the way it did. And normally I would say, oh man, that's just coach speak, but knowing him the way he is, he's a straight shooter, and I can see this team. I think if you could name a movie, and going back to, I love John Wayne, so if you could name a movie for this team, I would say that it would be True Grit. I think this team has a lot of grit that I don't know necessarily last year was with injuries, but this year they're really tough.
Yeah, and they've had, frankly, they've had the same number of injuries that last year's team has had. They haven't lost a valuable weekend rotation starter to an injury. What they have done is lose their front two weekend rotation guys to ineffectiveness during the course of the year, and now Trey Benton is out of the bullpen and Jake Agnos has been in the midweek role, and they're still doing what they're doing when they have 3, 4, and 5 in their rotation heading into the year as your weekend rotation. That's crazy when you really boil it down. And then you add in DeWanye's been out for a good half of the year. Turner Brown's been in and out of the lineup. You've had a couple of guys get sick over the last couple of weeks. You've had a couple bullpen guys miss some time. The number of injuries is almost identical to what it was a season ago, but it goes back to, yeah, there's no coach speak with Cliff Godwin. He is a coach, but what he speaks is his mind. And not just that team last year had to go through the ups and mainly the downs of not having enough bodies to compete at the level that they wanted to compete at, but the coaching staff needed to do that too. It's the first time that staff dealt with that level of injuries, and now they're faced with it again during the course of this season, and you don't see any level of panic. You don't see any level of guys stepping out of their body to try and fill a void. You're right. There's a grit level to this team, but it's because everybody knows what their role is on the team. It's not anybody trying to do too much. And it goes to the coaching staff too, trying to find various pieces to fit into the puzzle. They haven't done anything different than they would have done had this team been fully healthy during the course of the year. They haven't been, and they're still where they are. It speaks to what they had to go through last year paying its dividends this year. And it's a shame for all the seniors that were on last year's team that were so good that felt that that was their time to kind of break through, and it just couldn't happen. It's a shame for them that last year didn't happen, but for everyone else who was on that team, it was such a huge benefit to go through that because you're seeing it pay off this year.
Definitely. I hate to say the word hungry, but it seems like that's another word that came to mind when you were talking just now. They seem to get that, you know, they are good enough, but it's if it takes, you know, an extra time, and if it's time in the weight room, if it's time on and off the field. They've been doing very well, obviously, in the classroom. But it just seems like that there's, I don't know what the right word is, but it seems like they're hungry for it this year.
Yeah, I mean, there's a little bit of a drive to them that you kind of sense, but it's a very what's the word I'm looking for now? It's a very casual drive. That sounds a little negative, but there's no, like, when you talk to these guys, there's no, like, they're not overly intense. They're not, you know, staring you down with daggers in their eyes, that sort of thing. Like, they aren't just sitting there saying Omaha's the goal or whatever the case might be. They're going about their business game in and game out. There's no real waiver with this team about its focus, but it's natural. Like, it comes naturally to them to just kind of reset for the next day. This team doesn't have losing streaks, and it's amazing to see how they can just scrub out one game and move directly on to the next game, which a lot of teams in this position would not be able to do. There's just kind of a natural understanding for these guys that in order to get to where this team wants to eventually be, they have to take care of the nine innings in front of them first. And it's hard to really teach that to kids, especially with kids coming out of high school where they had nothing but success in their high school ranks. It's hard to get them focused that one game means nothing heading into the next game. And that's what you see right now with the Pirates, where there's just everybody's on the same page of it's not about what could happen come June. It is about what will happen come this Friday. Like, that's what this team has, that very few teams have that ability to pull off. And that's what's been mightily impressive.
You know, Corey, I was thinking when you mentioned the O word, Omaha, it's interesting because...
Oh, did I say that? Did I say that accidentally? Sorry.
No, but just seriously, like, I remember 20 years ago, I was covering the Pirates for a local station. The very first, in fact, 94.3, 98.3, we had Keith LeClaire on Henry Hinton station, and he was the very first interview. I'm pretty confident on that. The very first interview he did as the Pirate coach was on a talk show we did live at the Denny's on Memorial Drive in Greenville. And I'll never forget that because he was talking about, he was one of these inspirational guys, and he talked about Omaha, and he would always talk about Omaha. And of course, we knew the College World Series in Omaha, but it was kind of like a, to be honest, a pipe dream. It was conceptually, it wasn't really reality. And I think that he was the guy that really put that dream into reality, is that, hey, we can do this. And then the program kind of struggled some, where we could make it to a regional, but that was like our dream, you know. And then now with Cliff, it seems like we're back on the right track, and hey, we're, these guys don't have to worry about pumping themselves up about Omaha, because even though they've never been there, they really are good enough and talented enough to get there.
Yeah, I mean, and that's, I mean, you talk about LeClaire being the guy to kind of put that seed in place, and there's no coincidence that one of his players is now the guy in charge and has the similar type of mindset. Like, it's that you ask Cliff, and I won't speak for Cliff, but if you ask him, he will attribute everything when it comes to his coaching style and his approach to things to Keith. And that's why he wears his number. And everything that Cliff wants to accomplish with this program isn't for him. It's for ECU. It is for Greenville. It is for these kids. And it's for Keith. And so that's that. They all kind of confer together, Dave, where it's, yeah, this program can be better than being in regionals pretty consistently. And that's a hell of an accomplishment, to be in regionals consistently. There are 300 teams in baseball, and it's hard to get to the NCAA tournament. Last year is indicative of that. But it was Keith that first said, no, we can do more. We can do more here. There's the support is here. The interest is here. And the facilities are now here to do more with this program. And now Cliff has come in, and he has taken that one step further, where the support's even bigger, the passion's even bigger, the facilities are even better, and now the talent is even better than what it has been in years past. There have been some great Pirates to come through this program, but now there's just an understanding that year in and year out, you're getting some high-end talent in the state and elsewhere coming in. This is a program that now has bigger goals in mind than just making a regional. This year, it's hosting a regional, maybe hosting a super regional, and seeing where that goes from there. Because that's what has been built over the last 20 or so years. It takes time, Dave. It takes time to have a program set the foundation like what we've seen over the last couple of decades. And now you're seeing kind of the mentee taking it from the mentor and developing it into what it is today.
It's an amazing ride. And as a matter of fact, with Cliff, the one thing you always have to worry about and is the fact that he's so talented, he's so great, teams always want him. But I guess the old adage is just a good problem to have, because if the teams wouldn't want him if he was not successful in taking the teams to regionals or super regionals.
Yeah, I mean, whenever I hear stuff about this, and it's certainly out there, I go back to recently with, speaking of our most recent opponent of Houston, and when Tom Herman, their football coach, left for Texas after what he did and brought Houston to the Peach Bowl victory, nearly had them an undefeated year. They were in the top five of all the football national polls. During one of his shows, a fan asked what, you know, a lot of media outlets are saying, you know, you should go to Texas, you should go to LSU, that everyone's watching you here. Is there something that you can say to calm the nerves of Houston fans? And Coach Herman said, you should take that as a compliment, that so many bigger, you know, power programs are looking this way, because that means we're doing something right here. Right. And it turns out he left after that season. He went to Texas because he did all he could do, frankly, with the Cougars. But that's how... It's tricky, I know, and there, it's a slightly different circumstance because Cliff is an ECU guy, and if it comes to a point where he does leave, and you should not write that off, nor am I saying that he will, but he's going to leave for a position he feels is the best spot for him to be. But he is an ECU guy, and I know how much this program and these fans and this school mean to him, so there's a little bit of a different element here. Take what is happening right now and appreciate everything that's going on with this program and everything Cliff has done, because yeah, you're not going to get SEC schools calling for some other coaches that are around the American right now. You're not going to get Big 12 schools calling. They're going to focus on Cliff because of what he's done with a program that means this much to him. Appreciate that and love the fact that this program is where it is right now.
And thank God for baseball, because the program has suffered a lot as a whole collectively. Not going to get into that, but the athletic program. And so when you have a bright spot like baseball, it really keeps the Pirate fans their demeanor. And you're always going to have folks on the message boards who are never happy, but those are the message boards. But the folks, fans now that are really excited about Pirate baseball, you've got basketball, you've got all the with the special counsel, I want to say, interim athletic director and Dave Hart, but we can't. So it's a really exciting time, and I'm proud of all the stuff that Cliff has done. And, say that Cliff does leave, he's probably going to go and leave unless we've got the big goal or at least get to Omaha. So if that's the case, then we shouldn't be upset with him if he does leave.
Yeah, I mean, he has said, I mean, there's a reason why he wears 23. There's a reason why the LeClaires wanted him to be the guy to wear 23. And he's said he wants to take this team to the College World Series for Keith and then retire the number 23. That's his goal here with all of this. And who knows if it happens this year. Again, it goes to how we started this thing off, Dave. Baseball's very random. And a regional environment is just so uniquely different than any other environment you see during the season, where truly wildness can happen over the course of 3 or 4 days in a regional. But what Cliff has done is put this team in a position to legitimately contend to get to the College World Series this year. And again, it's, who knows if they make that goal? There's so much left to be played, but enjoy the ride for what this has been during the course of the year, because it has been one hell of a ride. And and at whatever happens after the season comes to an end, happens. But boy, this has been a blast, and I hope everyone realizes that.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you specifically on, the one thing I think about being a baseball fan from a family of baseball. For me personally, it comes down to one word, and that is pitching. Of course, we can talk about the hitting and all that and the defense, but pitching. Do you think, one of the questions I want to ask, I was going to ask you earlier and forgot and just realized it in my old age, is do you think the pitching can hold out because it's such a grueling season for college baseball?
I think it's deep enough to hold out. And you're kind of seeing that come into play over the last couple of weeks, where you've had Benton leave the rotation. You've had Agnos work his way back into the mix in the weeknight spot, now peering out of the bullpen during weekends. But then you're having a guy like Alec Burleson slide into the weekend rotation, Davis Kirkpatrick, Ryan Ross, Zach Barnes here of late, Gavin Williams. There are legitimate arms out of the bullpen that this team trusts. And then you back up, you have Chris Holbrook, who's been one of the nation's best pitchers, and you have Tyler Smith, all those guys backing them up. And when Trey gets back into form, backing him up. Yeah, this team is deep enough in the pitching staff to make a run here. It's amazing to watch these guys pitch, Dave, because these aren't swing and miss guys. The one guy who maybe going for that the most would probably be Trey Benton. But everyone else, for the most part, is a pitch-to-contact type pitcher, which means that they are legitimate pitchers. They have the stuff and they have the location to beat a lineup each and every day. And that's difficult to do. You can have 99 on the fastball and you can have a wicked slider that's in the upper 80s and you can get a ton of guys to swing and miss. But to be able to pitch like these guys are doing and have to strategically figure out how to work their way through an at-bat and then trust the defense behind them, which has been so good this year. That's where you have the merger of what we've had this year, where the pitching staff is mature enough to pitch not just throw. And then the defense behind them has been right there every step of the way. It has been a confluence of events here that has led to this team being where it is. And, you know, again, who knows what happens over the next month and a half, but there's no sign of that slowing down at the moment. So short answer long for you. They have the depth in the pitching to make a run to wherever the promised land might be this year. It's a depth that I think Cliff and Dan Rozelle was very excited about heading into the year, and now we're seeing it pay off because the bullpen went from truly problematic a season ago to one of the biggest strengths of this year's team. So it's been a lot of fun to watch these guys on the mound.
One of the things that probably that amazes me about Cliff Godwin is his recruiting abilities. And I wanted to ask you, I know got a couple minutes left here, but I wanted to ask you about, I would have never dreamed in a million years, maybe with Keith LeClair, but just collectively as a Pirate fan and alum and covering the team, et cetera, to see two top 20 recruiting classes. Do you know what's coming up for, I know not to get ahead of myself for next year, but do you think that we'll see another top 10, top 20 recruiting class?
To be honest, Dave, I'm not a guy that focuses a ton on future recruiting classes. I kind of look at, all right, who's in place this year and how do these pieces fit into place? This is year four with Cliff, and let's put Jeff Palumbo into this discussion as well, since he's the recruiting coordinator for this team. And together they have built two top 30 classes over the last couple of seasons. And I know, just generically speaking, the one that is trying to be in place for 2019 is in the top 30-ish as well, depending on what national rankings you look at. But there's a feel around the program. And I think the biggest factor at this is that Cliff is a very high energy guy when he's around these kids, but he also understands and relates to them. And so there are various mantras that this team has. There is never really a letdown by Cliff energetically, emotionally around these kids. But if he needs to sit guys down and have a heart to heart with them, he will, and then he'll also make sure they get into the classroom. And he tells, and Jeff Palumbo tells recruits every inch of that. There's no hiding anything. There's no sugarcoating everything. This is a group of guys that loves being around each other. This is a coaching staff that will get everything possible out of you, but do it in a way that enhances you and not harms you. And this is a program that influences not just success in the field, but success in the classroom. It's a pretty good sell. And now the facilities are starting to improve every step of the way, with an indoor hitting facility coming for next year. And the stadium has been overmade pretty nicely over the last couple of seasons. And the conference is a heck of a conference. There's a lot of things now that work in favor of ECU on the recruiting pitch that Cliff Godwin and Jeff Palumbo have been able to take and run with. And that's why you're seeing kind of a snowball effect of momentum building with incoming classes.
Well, I certainly know you could add that with North Carolina, you don't even have to go outside of even Pitt County, but it's such a, we always talk about North Carolina being a basketball state. It certainly could be argued with all the minor league baseball and all the great baseball across the state, but especially in Eastern North Carolina, you don't have to go very far.
Yeah, I mean, the state, you look at just some of the college programs in the state, Dave, and you have Carolina kind of recruits far and wide because it's a tricky school to recruit to. Same with Duke, but we're seeing the dividends with them now. Not going to mention the boys from Raleigh, but Wilmington, you go across to teams like Campbell and all to the mid-majors out west, like Charlotte, who's pretty good right now. I mean, there is such a bastion of talent within the state that it's not even really that much of an arms race right now for all of these schools in the state, because there's just so much to pluck from. There are a certain number of guys that recruits are, you know, they'll be battled for by various programs in the state. But by and large, there's been enough to kind of spread the wealth, and the Pirates have been very smart on who they've gone after. They've stayed a lot in the East, but they branch out a little bit. They hang out in the Charlotte area quite a bit. They got a couple of kids from the triad. So there's they have a very smart strategy here. And then when they need to dive outside the state, they will. And they've done it a couple of times. Connor Litton's been maybe the biggest addition this year. He's from Pennsylvania. And so to find a couple of these guys kind of floating around in the ether have been a huge benefit this year too.
Corey, I could talk to you for hours about baseball. You're a tremendous talent. I appreciate it. By the way, I want to mention to folks, I know locally they can listen to in the Greenville area on 94.3 The Game. They can listen to you. Also, one of the ways I listen to you when I'm in various driving different places, they can also listen to you on the TuneIn app, right?
Yep. If you go on the TuneIn app, find Pirate IMG Sports Network on your TuneIn app on your mobile device, and you can take myself and Coach O with you wherever you might be, wherever your heart desires around the planet.
And hopefully you're not like DJing a wedding.
Yeah, I mean, learn how to multitask if you're going to do that. And I think you pulled it off. I haven't heard any complaints. So
The only complaint I had, we didn't make it. But you know what? There's always this year or sometime. I know it's going to happen, and it'll definitely happen at the right moment. I appreciate you, Corey, coming on so much. By the way, how can folks follow you on Twitter?
You can find me at Corey Glor. That's CoreyGlor. I love getting the fan interaction during games, outside of games. I love hearing from you, Pirate Nation. I mean, I'm so relatively new to the group. This is my third season. So to be able to get to know some of you, whether it's in person or whether it is through social media, it's truly a blast of this job, and to know that the passion is there, and whether or not you like the style of game that I call, I hope you enjoy at least what I'm bringing you during the course of the season. And it's great to hear from all of you out there. I mean, it's such a passionate group of fans that you don't see in college baseball. And so it's made the job even that much more fun on top of a team that's really good.
Well, Corey, thank you so much for coming on, and I hope everybody will listen, and we hope to have you back on in a month or so when hopefully we can talk about postseason play beyond the conference tournament.
Well, let's do it, Dave. Thank you for having me.
What a great show. I appreciate our three great guests. Tom Jensen from the NASCAR Hall of Fame. Glad we'll definitely have him back. We'll also have David Glenn back from time to time, and certainly our third and final guest, Corey Glor. A tremendous talent and a great voice of the East Carolina baseball team, and I'm sure we'll have him back sooner than later when it comes to the postseason play for the Pirates. Thank you so much for all of you listening. In fact, we have more and more listeners each and every week. Appreciate that very much. You can like us on our Facebook page for The Sports Objective. You can follow us on Twitter at TheSportsOBJ. Until next time, you've been listening to The Sports Objective Podcast.
You've been listening to The Sports Objective Podcast. Join us next time as the guys will be objective, and the objective is sports.